This is Rishda Majeed on the 4th of November 2013. I am in Kabul, Afghanistan, talking to Mr. Ghulam Rasooli, who is the Director of Operations and now the Acting Executive Director of the NSP. Thank you so much for speaking with us, Mr. Rasooli.
You're welcome, Rishda, and welcome to NSP. And thank you for considering NSP as one of the institutions to review in your program. Referring to your second question first, in terms of how NSP evolved since 2003. Well, as you might have heard about NSP, the National Solidarity Program was initiated by the government of Afghanistan together with its international partners, particularly the World Bank. And the program, the mother program for NSP, is the current PNPM program in Indonesia. This program was kind of copied as a community-driven development program from Indonesia and was contextualized together with experts from Afghan society, including Dr. Ashraf Ghani, and the former ministers Hanif Atmar, Ehsan Zia, the current minister who was back then advisor to the ministry, Wais Barmak, and of course experts from the World Bank and international community. It was contextualized and rolled out in the first phase into 17,000 communities with a structure that was completely outsourced to back then called GTZ, which is now GIZ, the German organization. It was completely managed by the internationals up to 2007, which was the beginning of the second phase of the National Solidarity Program. Then, in terms of nationalization, there were steps taken that some of the roles and responsibilities were transferred to the Afghans in terms of taking over management responsibilities, and the oversight consultant remained with the advisory role to support the Afghan team. And then later on in during the later stages of 2007, the program was totally nationalized, and now where we are in the third phase of the program, it's completely run by the Afghan development experts, only having two international advisors who are completely doing the advisory function, except for the financial management aspect, which is a requirement from the donors and also agreed by the government of Afghanistan, that is even right now undertaken by GIZ. It's not that GIZ was the only organization who started with NSP, but through the procurement processes, competition processes, after GIZ, we did have other consultants for financial management, like Deloitte, like Maxwell Stamp, and now back with GIZ. That's on the structural and institutional part. But in terms of implementation, it doesn't mean that we don't have changes. The program has been evolving in all aspects of its operations since 2003 and 2004. We did have, the program did have the opportunities to bring in corrective measures from the lessons learned on the operations implementation of the program since 2003 and 4. And now, although we have learned a lot from what we have done in the past decade, we are still facing new challenges, new areas for improvements. And I think this is natural in all development activities, particularly when you work with communities. It's also related to how the communities are mobilized, how the communities know about development, how their expectations raise, and how the needs change from communities and their priorities change as development initiatives are undertaken in those communities. So with that, NSP has been trying to adjust its operations and respond to at least those basic needs and requirements of the rural communities. And we will continue until the end of this phase, which is September 2015, and shortly NSP together with its partners, stakeholders, will start working on design of NSP4. So that's how NSP has been operating and evolving since 2003 in brief. Now the first question, which was related to my experience with NSP. I will give you a little bit background before my engagement with NSP, when I used to work as reporting officer and program officer for United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan, UNAMA. That's called UNAMA. I worked for the Office of SRSG, and I was responsible to compile reports from across Afghanistan from our provincial and regional offices and submit to SRSG and send also a brief copy to headquarters for SG's review. And what I was doing, UNAMA was functioning in three components of political, security, and development. I used to receive inputs from across the country on in these three areas, and almost like every day on the development side, I kept receiving inputs only from National Solidarity Program.
Ah, interesting.
Then
Which year was this?
This was 2005 and 6. Then it gave me an impression that maybe this is the program where I want to work. Dealing with communities, addressing, identifying the needs of communities and responding to the needs of communities. Like every day when I received reports, I was compiling, like reading reports of hundreds of projects being implemented and inaugurated or handed over across the country. So I thought that maybe this is the right place where I want to go, and this is, and I see my future there. That made me think about it, and I kept looking for vacancy announcements, and one day I came across with a vacancy announcement for Deputy Director of Operations, to which I applied, and back then the position of Operations Director was international position. And the deputy position was local but there was a better candidate than me. We did go through the process, and the current executive director, Mr. Ayubi, he managed to take the position because he was with the program since 2004. So with the background and knowledge and capacity he had built and the trust, he managed to take that position. However, I was offered another position, which was kind of equivalent to my position in UNAM as senior program officer in the executive director's office. Then I did my calculations in terms of how could I better contribute directly to the communities, and then it took me 6 months though to make the decision, because I was still hesitant. I never worked with the government. I was thinking, how would I be able to cope with those challenges which I had heard from everywhere about working in a governmental organization. But then I did my analysis. I finally made up a decision and joined NSP as senior program officer in October 2007. Working for 1 year in that position, although I had the assurances from SRSG in UNAMA that they kept my position vacant for 6 months there, just in case I
changed my mind
and go back.
Yeah.
So that was also a favor from UNAMA. But the more I was engaged with NSP, the more I liked it, and I thought that this was the right decision I made. So I worked in that position for 1 year, and then I was offered another position for managing donor relationship as a bilateral donors manager. Worked in that position for another year, and then I was offered the position of deputy director of operations once the director of operation position was localized again, and Mr. Ayubi, the current executive director, became director of operations, and I became his deputy. And the same, that trend has continued. Now Mr. Ayubi is the executive director, and I've taken over again his position of director of operations. And we'll see how we can move on. But I still don't regret. After spending 6 years, this is the first month of the 7th year, I still enjoy working. Although I work more than 60, 70 hours per week on average, but I still don't regret, and with the good team that we have built here, we think that we can do something for those local communities. And that's where we are now.
Could you describe to me a little bit about how the NSP office is organized? What is the structure? What are some of the units?
Yeah. NSP currently has two directorates. One is executive directorate, which is mainly responsible for managing external relations, raising funds, donor relations, dealing with government organizations, agencies, and ministries. Also dealing with the program's steering committee, which is comprised of 10 government ministries led by second vice president. And then on the internal side, we have Directorate of Operations, under which we have three units within the directorate: Environmental, Social, and Gender Office, Environmental and Social Safeguards, and Gender Office. under one unit. Then we have field support unit, and we have implementation of NSP in high-risk areas unit. Again, under operations and headquarters, we have 10 departments, which are all kind of support departments, including finance, administration, procurement, human resource management, capacity development department, engineering support department, facilitating partners management department, and so on. And then we have 6 regional offices, regional coordination units, then 34 provincial offices. That's the core NSP structure. However, we are also at the district level, we have presence through our facilitating partners, which are national and international NGOs contracted to implement, to facilitate NSP implementation processes at the villages level. So they have their offices at the district level, from where they go and into communities and villages and implement, support implementation of the program.
Thank you so much. Has the structure changed over the years, or has it always been?
As I said, part of the evolution from 2003 was also related to structural changes.
Sure.
In terms of changing the functions and structures, for example, back in 2004 and 2005, the whole NSP management was done through the oversight. Yeah, GIZ, which was the oversight consultant. They had their pure management and oversight support role to the program. And the regional offices, the departments were not in the current shape that is right now. Then in 2007, the role of GIZ changed from oversight and management to advisory role. The same department's functions were changed, TORs were changed, and number of facilitating partners also changed as the program rolled out into more communities. We had to hire more organizations to facilitate the program. The same in 2010, was the complete shift to nationalization, and the role of a number of departments also increased again because of the workload, increased workload, and the function of regional offices from management changed to coordination, and more functions were given, more responsibilities were given to the provincial offices in terms of approving, disapproving the financial authority. Like currently, all proposals are being approved at the provincial level. Mm-hmm. Back then, all paperwork used to travel from all across the country to headquarters only for the sake of reviewing and approving. That took months, like on average 3 to 4 months delay in the whole process for one proposal to travel, for example, from Badakhshan to Kabul and then from Kabul back to Badakhshan for minor changes. Or it took maybe a year. As I said, based on lessons learned and requirements, the capacity that was built in-house, NSP was able to adopt and adjust and evolve accordingly and respond to those needs.
So in terms of the changes, one, you mentioned the oversight consultant and that role with the capacity bills has been shifted. You mentioned devolution of more authority in terms of financial decisions to the provincial teams. And I'm trying to get a sense of some of the other changes that may have been made.
Organization, as I said, that you mentioned,
yes,
was also a big change,
yeah,
a big shift. Otherwise, in terms of day-to-day operations on the ground, we are currently in the sixth version of operations manual. So the operations manual has changed at least six times, and now we are working on the seventh version to bring more improvements, introduce more changes, taking into account the elements of due diligence, accountability, and transparency.
Sure. Would you be able to give me some examples of what kind of changes have taken place in the manuals over the years?
One good example in terms of sub-projects implementation was that in 2003, NSP, since it was a purely community-demanded and driven program, when NSP went into communities, the first priority for some of the communities was power generation, electricity. For that, since NSP didn't have that experience, and the communities didn't have that experience as well, we approved projects for diesel generators, for example, for quite a number of communities, thousands of communities. And then later on, after a passage of 1 year or two, those projects, some of them were reported that were not operational because communities could not afford to maintain the diesel generators and also supply fuel to run the generator, despite the fact that in the plan initially it was agreed by communities that they will supply the power and then they collect a minor fee from the supply of power from each household, and then that will cover the cost for maintenance and fuel. However, that was not the case in many communities and hundreds of communities. Then in the first revision, NSP decided to identify some of the projects that NSP will not fund. And we put those projects under blacklist.
Okay.
That was one change. The other change, major change introduced was in terms of implementation of NSP in high-risk areas with little flexibility, however, again, maintaining the values of due diligence and transparency and accountability into consideration. We did also add a manual for gender inclusion, particularly. We, for example, in the sixth version, we made the participation of women, 50% participation of women in the executive committee of the program, mandatory. We reserved two seats out of four for women. Even if initially women are not able to take those positions, the seats will be reserved and will be filled on temporary basis by male members of those communities. And then other areas of nitty-gritty in terms of completion of closure of problematic communities in terms of how to deal with the social conflicts, how the processes should or should not allow delays due to social conflicts, taking into account elements of environmental and social safeguards. And all these changes, I could mention that have been incorporated as we roll out, as we face and come across challenges, and then we introduce solutions.
Thank you. You mentioned the safe list, you mentioned the blacklist listing certain projects. My understanding was that NSP did have kind of a list of projects that people could implement from the very beginning, or was it something that was
interesting? No, it was an open
menu.
And it is still an open menu, except for the projects that we have listed, that we will not fund.
Okay. And when did that change happen?
In 2007.
One of the other questions I had was that you mentioned earlier that there are different phases of the NSP, and I was wondering how those phases are designed, are defined. Is it a difference in design? Is it a difference
yes,
in...
Yes, it is. The first and second phases are more or less the same, because almost all communities were operating under similar circumstances, and they were entitled to receive the first block grant that they were entitled to. However, in terms of NSP 3, the way it was designed was, we thought that with the rollout of NSP 3, we will be able to cover the whole country, including we also thought of revisiting those communities that have already utilized their block grant and completed their projects. Then we defined NSP 3 in two components. Component A was covering remaining communities under same circumstances, same block grant size, same implementation approaches. And then component B was going back to the communities where those communities had already utilized their first block grant, and now was the time to fund other priorities and also keep the communities engaged with the NSP. So we conducted the next round of elections, mobilization, another community development plan, and that was for 12,000 communities in terms of repeated block grant, and around 17,700 communities for rolling out into remaining communities. We are still, that's the coverage map. The blue means covered, white means uncovered. We still have some districts where we still need to go, but the reason we could not go right now was due to insecurity. So in the next NSP or NSP4, we make sure that we also cover these communities if security situation allows.
You mentioned the repeater grants, so that was phase 3, that would have been 2010.
Yes, starting from September 2010.
In terms of the communities that you went back to that had already gone through an NSP cycle, did you see any difference or any variations in how they...
It was also reflected in the recently published or circulated impact evaluation of the NSP, which was conducted by MIT and...
Stanford.
Yeah. Harvard. There's a lot difference in terms of behavior as a whole, knowledge of development, participation in the in all aspects of governance and development, women participation. Women participation has increased from back then required 30% to up to 45% in these communities. And they're also involved more in political activities, like there are evidences that in these communities people voted more in all rounds of elections, being presidential, two rounds of presidential elections and constitutional elections, parliamentary elections. Two rounds of presidential elections. So there are significant changes in the behavior of rural communities. They are also more willing to have participation in development. There are cases of those communities being involved in receiving funds from other donors. Those were their own initiatives. They know how to approach other agencies and ask for support. Their capacity in terms of implementation of sub-projects has quite significantly changed. Now they're able to identify and deal with their needs. That's quite positive.
Thank you so much for that. In one of the questions I had was in terms of block grant disbursement, and has that been changed also with in terms of the tranches?
Yeah, in terms of the tranches, the disbursements approaches, yes. In NSP 1 and part of NSP 2, the schedule was that 40, 40, and 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was transferred, dispersed through three installments, but in the middle of NSP 2, because of the long delays and sometimes shortage of funds, delays in terms of communities receiving their block grants. Sometimes NSP also faced shortage of funds, and NSP, those donors used to comment and did not pay. So then NSP decided to disperse in two tranches, 90% and 10%. 90% was the first tranche, and 10% was again subject to physical progress of at least 70%. And then once that was verified, the second installment was released.
And when did that change happen?
In 2007-08, and then it continues.
The second phase continued. And has that made a difference?
Of course, yes. Well, the NSP since 2007 did not face huge problems, financial problems in terms of shortage of funds. It once occurred in 2007, though, but following years, we always had sufficient funds. But in terms of quick delivery and completion of some projects, it did have significant effect on the whole project cycle.
And if disbursements are, would disbursements be delayed to the local communities? And what would be the reasons for those? Because it seems that you already have the pool of resources except in 2007, as you said.
Yes. In some instances, the transfer of physical cash from, for example, the Afghanistan Bank into the provincial centers, the provincial branches, was also a challenge. It took months, even though and papers,
mm-hmm.
the transfer was made, but physical transfer was not happening.
Right.
If that was the question, I don't understand.
Sure, so that would be one reason for delays in terms of getting money out to the local communities. Would it also be delayed because of reporting requirements, because of any other...
You mean the availability of funds into NSP? At the local level. No, that was mainly due to non-existence of funds at the program level. Because donors had, we had commitments from donors based on which we approved projects, we contracted facilitating partners. However, we were waiting for
the money
to be paid by donors, and then we could channel the resources. So there were delays, like up to 6 months, 8 months delays. But we were just processing paperwork. We had thousands of projects piled up, waiting in the queue for money to receive and be dispersed. That also affected the overall project cycle in terms of completion. Back then, each community was supposed to complete 200% utilize their entitlements. That was...
Which years would this be?
I remember 2007 when I first joined here. We did have that experience. We had thousands of projects piled up. And I heard that we also had that experience in 2006, 5 and 6. And that was mainly due to donors committing on yearly basis. And then we also negotiated that we should have multi-year commitments from donors.
Okay.
That significantly helped us plan and then deliver.
Did the delays, in your opinion, affect the legitimacy of the program in the eyes of the...
Of course it did. Of course it did. We had to deal with quite a number of people traveling all the way from their provinces, coming here screaming for their resources.
Mm-hmm.
At some points, they were even thinking that these commitments are just false and promises that were made that will never happen. So they were coming, they were kind of protesting that we allowed our women, for example, to get out of homes, set with people, we identified our needs, we went through elections, we did all these things, but you're not abiding by the promises, what's happening. Then we had to explain the whole situation. Some of them were convinced, some of them, they had to go back with angry faces. But we had to deal with those.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. In terms of the MRRD's relationship with the Ministry of Finance, I'm wondering what kind of relationship reporting requirements or reports you have to give them in terms of them being able to disperse money now with the for the community bank accounts.
And during the first phase of NSP, and the second, it was agreed with, which is still continued, it was agreed between donors and the Ministry of Finance on behalf of the Afghan government that NSP will operate with a float account. Float account is an account that is still managed by the external financial management agent, outsourced. Back then it was managed by GIZ. So all the money from donors, for example, if it was money coming through the Advance and Trust Fund, Reconstruction Trust Fund, ARTF, it was allocated to NSP, a certain amount, and then it was channeled through, approved by Ministry of Finance, and it was dispersed to the float account. That float account was have the capacity of observing $80 million. And then the financial management agent has the right to disperse from that account on the basis of the paperwork that's processed through NSP offices, the proposals, approved proposals, and once the proposals are approved, the agent is dispersing, injecting money to the community bank accounts. Therefore, to the central bank. And then the FMA is responsible to compile the reports submitted to MRD Finance, and MRD Finance processes it through Ministry of Finance. It goes back to the World Bank client connection, and funds are replenished. So it's a cycle.
And it's still continuing the system.
It still continues.
Sure.
But we are not sure how long we can survive under those circumstances. And if that mechanism changes, we also don't know how would the Ministry of Finance be able to respond to that requirement. We hope for positive changes, but we don't know.
Related to that, what is the relationship of the MRRD in general to other ministries and NSP in particular, because sometimes the projects come through that may require education, health, and so on. So I was wondering what the relationship would be with line ministries. How would you manage that?
As I mentioned, NSP is chaired by a steering committee,
yes,
which 10 ministries, including sector ministries of health, agriculture, education, water and power, energy, Ministry of Interior Affairs, even IDLG, Ministry of Finance, all these ministries are, Ministry of Women Affairs, all these ministries are part of this committee. They approve policies for NSP implementation, and they are all engaged. And the relationship is good, apparently. However, sometimes there are always competition in terms of receiving resources, funds, and of course, since NSP is now the flagship program of the government and also favorite of donors, NSP always receives more funds than even some of the ministries.
So that's a difficult, well, it's a good situation to be in one place, but also a difficult situation in terms of...
Politically, it's a difficult situation,
yes.
But the good part and the strong support that NSP has had in the past was having strong ministers in the leadership, which could deal with those situations and protect the program in a way that it still becomes the favorite baby for everyone.
Sure. Thank you. In terms of the facilitating, I don't know if they're doing okay on time.
I just received the note that I'm having another meeting.
Okay. Sure. Do I have time for a couple of questions? Or?
Yeah, maybe another 3 minutes.
Okay. In terms of, so on the other side are the donors, and I was wondering what kind of relationships and how would you manage those relationships, where, especially if you're thinking of other countries and how they would want to learn from how you've dealt with the donor community.
From MRD's perspective? Or
from the NSP perspective.
NSP's perspective. Well, NSP, honestly telling you, and the donors community maybe did not have other alternative to be engaged with communities. The only program and the successful program that responded to the needs of communities, villagers, at the grassroots level with this big outreach and coverage was NSP.
Right.
Like we have Since 2007, I do remember that I worked on a couple of proposals for asking for bilateral funds. Otherwise, we always were overloaded with requests from donors to accept their funds and spend it through this mechanism. And we still are in that situation. That's why since 2007, we've never suffered from not having financial resources, particularly since 2010 during NSP3. Although we currently have some shortages of maybe around 300 more million to complete the NSP3, however, we do have assurances from our donors that once we exhaust these commitments and the paid amounts, then we will receive them. So maybe it was the all elements of transparency, accountability, and real community-driven development initiative that made NSP distinguished from other programs. And
sure. And what is your plan for phase four moving forward? Are there any major changes that you're thinking about in terms of the program?
We do have our analysis, and we do think that also in line with the transition decade and all words that we hear about budget cuts and limited resources, we need to adjust our mechanisms as well. We do have our options. However, the World Bank has also contracted recently a firm to conduct an institutional study and review of the program. Once we have that study, we might be in a better position to take informed decisions on the way forward. That's why we are still not, we have not still yet began discussing changes in the NSP 4, waiting for results of this study and also a couple of other studies that has already been done in terms of to compile all those results and see where we are
changes
and where we need to go.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I hope